We need therefore a man who has just this experience, call a man in every life. He is to all intents and purposes a man like us, with the same two eyes, same outer constellation and the same inner constellation, but he has dwelt in that way. Only with them we can have the right report of the scriptures, because they contain the saying of the masters who saw God and gave out. If you would like to understand those at the level of intellect, well, you cannot know God. For instance, what the intellectual will say. They say God is light, they say, well, God is intellectual light. Well, it is substantial light, all masters have referred to it. But when we need somebody who has solved the mystery of life, that can also help us in solving the mystery of life. And what is that? Just to rise above body consciousness. Such masters are a man you may address by any name if you like, who has known himself and know God. He says us, well, look, you're a man, you're dwelt physically, you're a man, you've got physical body, you've got intellect, you are spirited man, conscious entity, you're advanced physically, wonderful. We have got so many systems on the medical line, you see. There are Ayurvedic, there are Unani system is there, allopathic is there, homeopathic, electronic, treatments, naturopathy, and so on. We have also dwelt as family life, and our social life, the political life. You see, with all that we are not happy. Because we have to care for our own self, for our own families, for our own classes or schools of thought, or for our own country, the result is clash between man and man, family and family, religion and religion, and country and country. All this is due to not having the right understanding, as I tell you. Remain where you are. All schools of thought or religion were meant for the same purpose. To remain in some religion is a blessing. But to remain in some religion, not to rise above the body consciousness and have the right understanding and live up to them, there's conflict. So, physically we advance wonderfully. We have got intellect and we have also advanced intellectually. Very wonderful inventions we have got. You can hear things for thousands of miles through radios. You can see also man who is speaking through television. You can go around the world in an hour or so. The world has become very small. I'm here from the other part of the world before you. The result, what it is now, we are trying to reach the moon too. Then are we happy? For want of right understanding, we are not happy. Our intellects have gone to just invent hydrogen bomb and uranium bombs. And any moment this atomic war commences, the world will end. We are all afraid of. Had we known our own self and known the same spirit of mind in everybody and the same controlling power controlling everybody in the body, Eh? Who would have got to just use this weapon for killing others? No, love God. God resides in every heart. Well, when you know the spirit of we are of the same as that of God, and the very God is the controlling power residing in every heart, are we going to kill or harm anyone? If I say I love you and kill you, can I kill your sons, children? Not the least. And the Master tells us, if you do not know, love your brothers, whom you see, how can you love God whom you do not see? These are very clear cut, very simple way, truths, which needs no philosophy to prove, common sense talk. But we have forgotten. The Master tells us, we need somebody. He says, what does he say then? He sees from the level of man body or the level of the embodied soul. He says, all are children of God. They have pity on them because they have forgotten themselves and their own true home. They come to awaken them. They say, awake, O man. You got the man body within the time of your awakening to your own self and to know God. If you do not awaken now, when will you awake? You say you are of the same essence as that of God, the same controlling power residing in your body. Why have you forgotten it? Why the two brothers living in the same house cannot talk with each other? The reason is that our souls are just identified with the outward, outgoing faculties and given up to the damage of layer. So they have pity on their souls. They are children of God. Their true home is the two whom are the fathers, they awaken and have pity on them, you see. He says, God is all wisdom. You should also be wise, because you are of the same essence as that of God. But you are behaving like a foolish man. You have to leave the body. Who is to leave the body and where to go? You must see these things by far sight. But you are just asleep from within, wide awake from outside, at the level of the outgoing faculties, they say, awake. We are sleeping somewhere from within. The very controlling power is within us. Soul and God are sleeping in the same bed, you might say. But soul is just under the control of mind, under the control of outgoing faculties, identified with the outward player so much so that is awake from outside and asleep from within. If soul is liberated, analyzed, rise above these senses, they will see the God in their audience. This is what the Master says. That if you were to wake up a man who is very far sleeping, what does he need? Somebody to shake him up. Who is awake? So if a man is standing, you see, all others are sleeping around him, when you say to this, I'm in society of an awakened man, he can make all others awake by the shaking of his feet, by calling them, by giving louder voices. Similarly, if there is a doctor, there are 100 students around him, you can say it is the company of a doctor. or he can make all others doctors. Similarly, if you come across by somebody in the way, well, what will he do? He can wake you up. Call any man, such man, by any name you like. What we need is need of somebody in the vacancy. And what do they say? How can you come out of this delusion? They say one thing. Just step out of this boat of man body. And you will see what is what. So they always instruct, learn to die so that you may begin to live. What is death? At the time of death you see, perhaps you must have noticed somebody dying. The life withdraws from the underneath, comes to the back of the eye, then the eyes are upturned. And then the drop seat comes. So the seat of the soul in the body is back the eyes. At the time of death we do come up there, but we don't want to come up now. While alive, learn to die so that you may begin to live. And all other masters say that. To come out of this delusion only if you know how to die. That's all. Prophet Muhammad told some of the disciples, he said, "Oh friend, if you like to have an everlasting life, just go and learn to die." The same thing you find in all scriptures, I tell you. The difference is that those are given in different languages, which were prevalent at the time when those masters came in their countries. He said, "Well, look here." Then the question told the disciple, "Lord, will this death lead me to the grave when I'm dying, afraid of dying?" Very name of death puzzles a man, you see. But there's no other escape. All have to leave the body someday, sooner or later. Whether it's young or old or anything. So he told him, "Look here, it is not such a death that will lead you to the grave, but will lead you from darkness to light. So for that reason, what you should do, go, learn to die, so that you may have everlasting life. And this is you can do while in bed for you." And the Kabir says, all men are dying from day to day. But if they die in such a way, they will never return. So while alive, it is better to learn to die so that you may have everlasting life. The same words in their own language I am quoting. So is it possible? Dad Hussein says, "Well, die before you have the death." And the Guru Nanak says, "Well, die 100 times a day, not once." These are very, startling statements made, but it is so, it is possible, it is death. And you find the proofs thereof. Saint Paul says, "I die daily." The Lord is dying, but that is the lost enemy that we have to conquer. Well, this is a question which affects one and all. We have died very little to have this fear of death gone. How can you have victory over death? There's no escape from it. Only you must know how to die. And it is the masters, I tell you, who give you this experience the very first day. The greatness of the master lies in the fact not in giving you lectures, talks, asking you to just say prayers this way or that way or perform certain rites and rituals in a certain way. This any man can do after registration, any of you. But the other fact, how to withdraw the soul currents of the body, come at the back of the eyes, rise above senses, and open the inner eye to see the light of God, that this is not the work of everyone. Blessed you are in whatever religion you have joined. You have taken the first step, that's all right. Now please take up the other step, knowing how to die. Why are we afraid of death? First, we do not know how to leave the body. At the time of death, you might have seen so many people in great agony. When masters come, they give you the very first day experience how to rise above body consciousness. You see, you have risen above body consciousness. You see that you see the light of God. You have experience of the God beyond, who is the controlling power, keeping us in the body, controlling all universe. If you do practice that way from day to day, the result is what? You can die daily 100 times a day. But how this thing can happen? Where there is no, this cannot be explained in words, but this can be had by experience. All sensory current in the body, there are ways and ways for that, which I will take up in my one subsequent talk here, tomorrow and day after. Why we cannot rise above body consciousness, how to do it, how the experience is given. If you once given experience, you rise above and see, have experience of the controlling power of God which is within you. From day to day, regular practice, you will have no fear of that. And second reason is, we do not know where to go. You see? You need to leave the body at will, join the kingdom of God, you see? Well, you know where to go. When you know that, all fear of that is gone. And you will become the conscious co-worker of the divine plan. You will have an everlasting life. This is the mystery that we have solved at the feet of somebody who has known God, who has solved this mystery of life. Call him by any name you like. When our masters come, what do they say? Oh man, wake up. Know thyself. In the golden opportunity you have got to know God, and for that purpose you have died various religions. Now we have to see how far we have progressed, attained that object. If we have attained that object, well, it's good. If you can do without such a man as I referred you, without him, have this very experience, well and good. The blind man needs 2 eyes to see. If you can, then you can have the help of somebody who knows the way and is competent to give you that experience. Even the worldly things, in any subject, in any pursuit, they all relate to the ongoing faculties. We need somebody expert in that line where do we not, this is a matter of common sense only, do we not need somebody to guide us or give you an experience? Indeed, to have experience of the kingdom of God cannot be had by observation, which starts only when you rise above body consciousness. Consider calmly, please. So this is the man-body only which we need, this thing. And for that, there is some qualification required. And you would like to join any medical college, you need the qualification of having a degree of B.Sc. or F.Sc. Whoever had that qualification, whether he belongs to one religion or the other, he can join the medical college. Similarly, this way, there are some qualifications required. First of all, is what you say, purity of heart. Blessings are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. All religions you find. Sermon on the Mount was given for that very purpose. Eightfold path of Buddha was given for this eight purpose. In all religions you find Yama, Deva, Sishamadi, Hindus give the same thing. How can you expect an emperor to enter in a filthy cabin? Body is the true temple of God. It must be kept pure so that the God may manifest only pure hearts. So first is the purity of heart. That comes, if you love God, love resides in every heart, and we are all of the same, the sense of that of God, we are all children and brothers in God. Well, are you going to harm anybody? Love God and love all humanity. They are all born of the same equal presence of God. One is sitting on the table of a president, the other is subordinate peer. Well, all the same, the different status in life is there according to the reactions of the past, but all the same, they are men with the same privileges from God. And violence in thought, word, deed. Then comes truthfulness. Be true to your own self. Don't deceive your own self. If you want to deceive others, we first deceive our own self. We know that is wrong and still say, is it not a deceiving your own self first? You are within you, and your God is also the controlling power within you, whom you want to meet, and you are going to deceive him, put dust into his eyes, and be chaste. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And God, love God, with all heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and love thy neighbor. All masters say the same thing, of course, in their own languages. God is love, and love is God. And the way back to God is also love. Those who do not understand love cannot understand God. Who do not know love cannot know God, for God is love. He prayeth best who loveth best. Tenth Guru of the Sikhs tells us, and you all, irrespective whether you belong to one religion or the other, I tell you the truth. God is approached only by those who love, true love alone. So that is why it's called God is life, God is light, God is life, God is love. and we are of the same essence as that of God, we are also in love personified. That is ingrained in us. That ought to be dwelt. From selves to family, from family to the classes, back to the countries. With all that you would be, that it creates more trouble, more conflicts, because each one tries to love their own bodies, their own families, their own classes, their own countries. But unless you love your self-expense to cover all the world over, there can be no peace. So when our master comes, they seek at that level, they pray, peace be to all the world over. So I give you today in the outer, very elementary step to come up further. Tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, there will be two talks successively to give you further insight into the day. How we have just forgotten ourselves, how can we liberate, know ourselves, whether there is a God, we can see Him, and how and where. This will form the subject of my further two talks, tomorrow and day after. Those who are interested in them, they remain in their own religion. I have not come to get one religion or the other. I see the truth in everywhere. So remain in your own religion, try to understand the teachings given by the masters in their own religion. Whenever they come, they give always universal teachings. That is that I gave you a very common sense point of view. We have to just have the right understanding. For want of right understanding, there are all conflicts going on. I have met for this purpose the various social heads, the religious heads, and the political heads too. They are the driving forces of all matters. If your angle of vision is changed, to have the right understanding, there can be peace. So even I have met the political heads too. If our religious have to the right understanding, there will be conflict. The pity is even the ministers of the various religions, they do not know the truth, I would say. Otherwise, if they know, this is the truth. Common sense talk. I met the political heads too. I talked with them. I told them, well, all presidents, kings, and other emperors of the various countries, they are given charge of the so many children of God, to be looked after properly. So each country should live and let others live. If one cannot maintain and look after the children of God placed under their his care, others should help him, because it is service of humanity, service of mankind. Why to kill thousands of millions of people? Very competent, that appeals to everybody, and that is, and a great response even from the governors, and the others who met political and social and the political life. For want of right understanding and unity, understanding of the unity already exists in man, all this understanding. Masters come from time to time to unite the child humanity together, the children of God together. They don't break the religion, they say, whatever school of thought you have followed, you are blessed. But take the first step, have the right understanding. So when the masters come, they give always universal teachings. They look to the man for the level of the man body or level of the embodied soul. And they are the same. they want them to take further step to know God, and to know God they must know themselves first. Today's talk is over, tomorrow all men belonging to various religions, they are all welcome who have got this touch of God within them. I hope they will have the salvation from their own scriptures. Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the final segment of an evening talk given by Master at the Cowan Heights Ranch in California on December 12, 1963. Our reader this morning is Scott Stewart.
Hello, everyone. Today's reading will be a continuation of Master's great work, A Great Saint, Baba Jai Mal Singh, His Life and Teachings. I will begin the reading where I left off the last time I read. The family celebrated the homecoming in traditional style, offering thanksgiving to the Almighty, arranging scriptural recitations and the singing of hymns, distributing sweets among the neighbors, and offering food to the poor. Jai Mal Singh, now 16, took up the family duties once more and gave himself up to the consolidation of what he had learned in his recent itinerary. Soon after his return, the Sathyala yogi, who had initiated him into pranayama 3 years earlier, arrived, true to his parting promise, at Guman to see his young disciple. Jai Mal Singh received him with reverence and humility, and his former teacher offered to instruct him in the other practices of traditional yoga. But the youth was no longer a child. His wide travels and the varied accompanying experience had given him a new maturity. What had seemed desirable once no longer seemed of much value, for his contact with many a yogi had convinced him of one thing at least. The kriyas of hatha yoga might give strange physical and occult powers, but they could not bestow full inner peace and freedom. Every fresh day only strengthened his old conviction that the path of complete mukti, or emancipation, lay some other way, and all that he now sought was initiation into the mystique of the Panth Shabd. Time rolled on its mercury wheels, but Jai Mal Singh was not the man to sit idle or be content with only the second best. Awake, arise, and stop not until the goal is reached, enjoined an ancient Vedic text, and his life was a living embodiment of this precept. Barely 8 months had elapsed since his return, when the urge to resume his quest for the holy Nam became too powerful to be resisted, and he began pressing his mother for permission to set out once more. "How can you expect me to let you go again? You were a child then, but now you are a grown-up man and understand your responsibilities. Ah, mother, at my birth you prayed for a saintly son. Then why stop me now? How can you talk this way? Have I ever checked you in your religious inclinations? Surely you can pursue your devotional practices and spiritual disciplines while living at home. How can godliness and worldliness go together? But you yourself have seen how others have encroached upon our lands after your father's death. We barely get enough to eat, and when you are gone, your brothers being so young, what will prevent them from forcibly occupying the rest? Let them take whatever they will. This world is not ours, and even if the lands are not taken away from us, we will have to leave them someday when our lifespan is over. We have only to sustain ourselves. What matters if all our property is lost? The Lord has given us sinewy arms. We shall earn a respectable living." He whom nothing could dissuade while yet a child could not be deterred now, and Bibi Daya had no choice but to let him go. Thus, at the age of 16 years and 9 months, Jai Mal Singh once again set out on his spiritual explorations, having well nigh exhausted the Punjab and the Northwest, with the words of the Peshawar Sikh still reverberating in his ears, he bent his footsteps eastward. The times were insecure, and the British had not yet fully entrenched themselves in their new northern conquests. Night travel was therefore prohibited, and sentries were stationed at night on the chief highways to prevent any stray travelers. But Jai Mal Singh was too eager to be thus restricted. He would spend the first half of the night resting and sleeping, and then the second, while the sentries were drowsing and dozing, continue his journey as quickly as possible. At Vairak, a village on the banks of the Bayaz, not far from home, he met a sadhu named Kahan, who was engaged in collecting bricks. "Good day, Holy One," said the youth. "What is it that keeps you so busy?" "Nothing, my son, nothing. I am only collecting material for your future dwelling," smiled Kahan, and once more got lost in his work. When others of the village would question him in like manner, he would reply with characteristic brevity, "A temple will rise here one day," and relapse into his usual silence. Jamal Singh, not knowing where to go, directed his steps toward Hardwar on the banks of the sacred Ganges, a favorite haunt of the holy. Traveling by night and by day, he footed the distance with commendable speed and in 12 days reached the Ganges. He explored the ghats of Hardwar, then a small town almost entirely populated by pandits and sadhus, hearing learned yogis, questioning them, and discussing his problems with them. From the main town, he traveled alongside the river, visiting all the sacred spots in the neighborhood. At Tapoban, he heard of a very old sadhu of about 150 years who dwelt not far away in the heart of a thick jungle and possessed great powers but seldom spoke to those who came to see him. Undaunted by the yogi's reported silence, Jamal Singh wended his way into the forest and at last found the hermit's dwelling. The sadhu was busy with his spiritual practices and paid no heed to those that came to see him in order to be blessed by his sight. The evening drew near, and the sky and the branches overhead burst into life with the twitter of hummingbirds. All the visitors departed. The forest would soon be dark, and who could tell what wild creature might be prowling in the thick foliage, awaiting its chance? Jamal Singh alone stayed on. Night fell, and yet the yogi took no notice of him. He at last got up, walked to a swing, hung from a nearby branch, and took his stand, resting his arms on his wooden seat. Hour after hour slipped by, but the ascetic stood on motionless, displaying no signs of fatigue. At last, darkness began to break and brought an end to his nightly feat of endurance. He left the swing, disappeared into the jungle, and returned after bathing. Jamal had been keeping night-long vigil and had kept watching the unusual behavior of the strange man before him. When the sadhu came back after his bath, he at last showed some signs of being aware of his visitor's presence. He asked him who he was and what he wanted. The youth told his name, the place from whence he came, and added, "Holy One, for many years I have been in search of true spiritual enlightenment. I heard of your fame and your great powers, and have come as a supplicant to your door. I have watched with interest your strange practices, and if indeed they grant full liberation from inner restlessness, then pray instruct me into their secrets." The sadhu made no reply. He sat silent and closed his eyes. After a while, he opened them and answered, "My son, my discipline is difficult and bestows many powers. But as for inner spiritual freedom, I am afraid it has not secured me that." Jamal Singh wished to question the yogi still further, but the latter became silent and receded from the world of outer consciousness into that of meditation. The sun ascended the heavens and the day passed by. Some devotees came to have a glimpse of the famous yogi, bowed reverently at his feet, and leaving some food for Jamal Singh and some offerings for the ascetic, departed as on the previous day. Once again the night fell, and once again the youth from Guman sat on. The yogi at last rose from his seat and spent the second night in the same manner as the first. When day broke, he went for his bath, and on returning, beckoned Jamal to his side. "My son, I cannot tell you much," he said, "but in my meditation I saw that the guru you seek dwells with his wife in Agra. He is indeed a great soul and discourses from the Granth Sahib. He shall unlock to you the treasures of the Panch Shabd. Proceed there, and I myself will follow as soon as I can to partake of his bounty." What a burden fell off Jamal Singh's back. How many nights had he spent tossing and praying, wondering if God would ever grant his wishes? The stranger at Peshawar had given him hope, but his words were vague and nothing was certain. Now at last a definite clue had been given to him, and success appeared within sight. The Lord was indeed kind and did not ignore his humble servant's supplication. Refreshed in spirit and confident in mind, the youth, with a heart overflowing with inexpressible gratitude, bowed before the yogi, now wrapped in silence, and humbly took his leave. The consummation. Barely 10 days had elapsed before Jamal Singh, passing through Hapur in the holy town of Mathura, arrived at the gates of Agra. It is a city famous since the days of the great Moguls, and many a tourist from afar and near, from beyond the Atlantic and the Pacific, has had glimpses of its magnificent Taj and other historic monuments, as well as its sultry heat and dusty streets. But the youth from the Punjab had not come to view its historic splendor. He had no flair for its gorgeous and massive mausoleums, forts, and palaces built by Akbar and his illustrious successors. What he sought was not the reminiscences of time, but the enlivening breath of the eternal. Instead of visiting the Taj, he explored the local shrines and temples in search of the boon that had been promised him. But try as he might, his exploration seemed to lead nowhere. He could find no clue to the man he sought. Were his hopes baseless? Was the promise given him at Peshawar and confirmed in the heart of a forest on the banks of the sacred Ganges only a hoax and a delusion? Perhaps there had been error. Perhaps he was not yet ripe for the gift. Many thoughts crowded Jamal Singh's mind as he sat contemplating on the banks of the Jamuna one morning after having bathed in its waters. While he sat this morning, two men approached him, discussing personal matters. At first he took scant notice of them, for many came daily for a dip in the sacred river. But then a word shot through his ears, and he was all attention. Yes, they were talking of a Swamiji, a great sage, who often discoursed on the six scriptures at his home to a small audience. Jamal Singh was on his feet. He accosted these strangers, inquired of them about the great man of whom they spoke, and begged to be conducted to his dwelling. As soon as the two devotees had finished bathing, they set out with Jamal Singh for Puni Gali, where lived the great Swamiji. When the three reached their destination, the master was speaking on the Japji, expounding its profound meaning and unearthing the spiritual treasures hidden in its lyrical ecstasy. There were only a few listeners, and Jamal Singh slipped quietly into a corner. He heard the discourse with rapt attention, drinking in every word that fell from the lips of the saint. When the morning assembly was over, Swamiji welcomed his new visitor and asked him what he wanted. "I am in search of the gift of Nam and a saint who can bestow its blessing upon me," replied Jamal Singh. "I heard of your greatness and have hastened to your door." "I am afraid you will find no saint here," smiled the radiant Swamiji. "I am only a mere servant of the saints. Even the great Nanak regarded himself as no saint. Then how can a mere nothing like myself be of any consequence?" He then welcomed Jamal once more, assuring him that he could stay there as long as he pleased, for all were free to share the bounty of the Sahib, the Lord above. Later that day, Swamiji spoke to Jamal again. Pleased with his deep immersion in the Granth Sahib, he asked him to recite one of his favorite hymns. The youth began melodiously to chant the piece beginning, "Karam Hovai Sadguru Milai, Sewa Surat Shabd, Chit Lai." By the grace of God, one can meet a master who puts him on the service of the Surat Shabd Yoga. Rag Mag M3. The recitation was moving. It was clear that the speaker had himself felt with deep intensity what he chanted. When it was over, Swamiji asked him if he understood the full meaning of the verses he had just rendered. "O Holy One," came the answer, "if I had understood their true import, why then should I wander lost in this fashion?" And as he spoke these words and recalled his long journeys and the many vicissitudes he had, Jamal Singh's eyes brimmed with tears and silently overflowed. Swamiji placed his hand lovingly on the youth's back and reassured him. "Be of good cheer," he said. "We are old comrades, and there is no cause for worry." Then, taking up the hymn that had been just recited, he expounded its spiritual meaning at length, weaving with subtlety the threads of personal effort and divine grace essential for the salvation of the human soul. Next morning, Swamiji resumed his discourse on the Japji. When it was over, he turned toward Jamal Singh and suggested, "If you have any doubts or questions, why not clarify them now? Speak your mind fully. I am only a humble servant of the Lord, and one may say anything to a servant, anything, high or low. Don't be afraid, but speak frankly. I would be only too happy to be of some assistance to you, for I regard this as my service to my Guru." Later that afternoon, Swamiji once again requested Jamal to recite a hymn from the Sikh scriptures, and the Sikh youth began chanting, "Utpat Parle, Shabde Hove, Shabde Defir Opat Hove." Creation and dissolution is caused by Shabd, and the creation again comes into being by Shabd. Rag Mag M3. The afternoon talk centered around this hymn, and the master took up at length the theme of the Shabd, or Nam, answering one after another Jamal Singh's as yet unvoiced questions on the subject. He showed how the word was the primal cause of creation as well as of its dissolution, how it was at once the agent of the Almighty Absolute and itself the Absolute. Without its power, nothing was created, and only through contacting it could one reach back to one's heavenly home. When all had departed and Jamal Singh was left alone with Swamiji, he drew closer and began to question the saint on the way to salvation. He was convinced that the Agra sage was a true master, but the fact that he was not a Sikh and smoked the hookah caused him some uneasiness. But as Swamiji took up the subject of salvation and began revealing how Shabd was the only means of mukti, how its contact could be given only by a Puran Sant, a perfect master, how man without it could never fully escape the meshes of Maya, and how its practice and mastery lay within the reach of all regardless of its practice, and mastery lay within the reach of all regardless of their differences of sect and custom, Jamal's doubts were dissipated and he begged to be initiated. Swamiji then began to instruct him into the theory and practice of Surat Shabd Yoga, and when the instructions were over, asking the youth of 17 to sit down for meditation, he left the room. As soon as Jamal Singh sat down for meditation, he got lost in samadhi. The night came and passed away. The day broke, but the continued motionless, lost in the inner bliss he had discovered, another day saw itself swallowed by the night, and the night saw itself replaced by another day, and yet the youth sat lost to the world around him. When some 48 hours had thus gone by, Swamiji asked some of the disciples if they knew where the visitor from the Punjab had disappeared. "We saw him 2 days ago at the satsang," they said, "but we have not seen him since." Swamiji smiled and proceeded straight to the little room where he had left his latest disciple, in which none had entered for 2 days. He placed his hand on Jamal Singh's head, and when the latter's soul returned to normal physical consciousness and he opened his eyes, he saw his guru beaming at him. "Do you, my boy, still doubt if your master be a true Sikh or not?" he asked with a twinkle in his eye. The lad wished to fall at his feet, but the long spell of samadhi had left his joints numb and still. Swamiji suggested that he rub his legs, and when Jamal could move, he conducted him outside. There he gave him a drink of milk with his own hands, and gazing at him fondly, he said, "You too shall do one day the work I carry on now. Our path is not concerned with outer forms and rituals, and each of us must live by the best traditions of the community in which the Lord has been pleased to place us." He then began commending the teachings of Nanak and the Sikh Gurus and said that those who were their followers needed little instruction. "Always abide by the injunctions of the Granth Sahib," he continued. "Abstain from meat and drink. Never depend for your sustenance on others, but live by the labor of your own hands. Whatever you earn, share freely with the needy, and remember to serve the holy and the poor. And above all, never be proud of your own good deeds or critical of the actions of others, but know yourself to be in error, and never step outside the virtue of inner humility." Jamal Singh heard with reverent attention his master's advice, and ever afterward tried to model himself on the same. He devotedly attended the daily satsang and assisted in whatever manner lay within his reach. His past training had disciplined him well for his spiritual sadhana, and he would devote himself untiringly to bhajan under Swamiji's guidance and with his phenomenal inner progress. New mysteries were daily revealed to him, the mysteries of which Nanak, Kabir, and Tulsi had so ecstatically sung. In those days, during the mid-50s, Swamiji did not have a large following. He had not yet begun giving public discourses and confined his meetings to small private audiences at his home in Punagali after having discontinued his talks at the Mai Dhan Gurdwara. 7 or 8 of his disciples were especially devoted to him and constantly sought his company, and there was great affection and harmony. Every morning the master gave an inspiring talk, displaying before his listeners' eyes spiritual treasures hidden in the Granth Sahib or the writings of Kabir and other great saints. After the morning satsang, those present sat down for their meals. The food was cooked by Swamiji's wife, Srimati Narayan Devi, who came subsequently to be addressed as Radhaji, as a mark of public respect and adoration. While Swamiji personally served the food to all with loving attention to each, in the afternoons and evenings there would often be informal conversations and discussions, and at times regular discourses. A month and a half passed by in this way. Jamal Singh was happy to live at the feet of his benevolent master. It was the year 1856, and a regiment of Indian sepoys, including several Sikhs, was about this time stationed at Agra. At the instance of Swamiji, Jamal Singh joined up as a recruit. He would attend this morning parade and, duties over, hasten to his guru's door. There he would attend the satsang, hear Swamiji, sit for meditation, and return to his quarters in the cantonment at night. His army colleagues would often ask him where he spent much of his time. When he told them of the greatness of Swamiji, some of the Sikhs' friends wished to meet the illustrious saint, and one day, accompanied by 6 of them, Jamal Singh set forth for Punagali. Swamiji was discoursing on some hymn from the Granth Sahib when the group from the cantonment arrived. Chacha Partap Singh good-humoredly remarked that the Punjab seemed to dominate the satsang that day. Swamiji turned to him and said, "The people of that land, above all, have a right to the spiritual riches of which I speak. Who can ever do justice to the glory of Punjab that bore a soul like Nanak? He, above all, taught us that freedom does not lie in idol worship or in rituals, and while we in these parts are still lost in ceremony and idolatry, insensitive to the message of Kabir and Nanak, the souls of Punjab are free from such evils and need only a spark to set them ablaze. Mark my words, for they are worth remembering. The gift bestowed upon me by the Lord shall flower one day on the plains of the Punjab." Then turning to his visitors, he welcomed them, entertained them as best he could, bade their leader Jamal Singh to be regular in his army duties, and when the time came for their departure, wished them farewell. The light army duties left Jamal Singh's ample time for meditation. If he had no night duty, he would get up at 2 a.m., bathe, and sit down for meditation. During the day, as soon as the parade and other normal duties were over, he would engage himself in like manner or hasten to the home of Swamiji. He was known for not wasting a single moment on pastimes popular among his fellow soldiers. He visited Punagali with great regularity and often acted there as Swamiji's pati, or reciter, and many of his friends, because of his impact, became his master's disciples. Life was peaceful and happy, and was bearing steady fruit, but a day arrived when the regiment was ordered to move from Agra. Heavy of heart, Jamal Singh met his master and sadly related the news. "Oh, sir," he said, "how I yearn to enjoy the blessings of satsang a little longer." Swamiji smiled and replied, "Well, let us wait and watch for the will of the Sahib." Next day, fresh orders arriving, canceling the departure of the regiment. Jamal Singh was making speedy inner headway. He often told Swamiji of his various spiritual experiences, and his guru was pleased with his progress. Once when he told him of his steady access to Dasamudwar, the 10th gate, the 3rd major stage of the mystic soul, but this his inability to penetrate beyond it. Swamiji exclaimed, "Ah, that is quite understandable. We have worked at this spiritual exploration together before, and in your last life you mastered up to the third stage. Hence, your ease in progressing thus far and your subsequent difficulty." He, however, reassured his young disciple and encouraged him to keep up his effort. When the latter one day reported still higher ascent, Swamiji was mightily pleased and declared enthusiastically, "Continue in this fashion, and you will soon be ready to help other souls to salvation. You have been born to help mankind, and between you and me is no real difference. I am not worthy of such honor. Oh, let me be humbly at your feet, far from the fangs of pride. Fear not, a true saint can never be proud. Oh, sir, keep me at your feet, the servant of servants of saints. That is all I ask. You shall indeed have a saint's service, saving humanity, bringing it to truth and spiritual liberation. What is the giving away of a million cows to the saving of a single soul? You may do as you judge best, but as for myself, I know only too well my worthlessness and limitations." The 6 months for which the regiment's departure was postponed were over, and Jamal Singh had to go. He took leave for the last 3 days and spent them in the company of his master. When at last the time for bidding farewell drew near, Jamal Singh could bear it no longer. "My heart breaks at the thought of parting. If you so will, I can have my name struck from the army rolls." But Swamiji would not hear of such a thing. "Build your love on the Shabd within. That is your real guru, and is ever at your side. All else is transient and must be left behind. You must earn your living, for if you depend on the labor of others, you must pay for it with your mental peace, and your understanding will be clouded. If you have to work, then why leave the army?" Jamal Singh had no choice but to bow before the superior wisdom of his master. At parting, Swamiji spoke of the nature of sainthood and the conduct of saints. He related anecdotes of their great humility, and when bidding farewell said, "Your regiment is now leaving. If you ever meet a true seeker, put him on the inner path, but remember always that you are only a humble instrument of the saints." Tears filled the young soldier's eyes as he fell at the feet of his guru and bade him adieu. The Soldier Saint. From Agra, the regiment moved to Delhi. Jamal Singh, deprived of his master's company, began looking for some spiritual seeker with whom he could associate. He soon discovered one Baba Karam Singh, also in the army, who was a great devotee of the Lord. He began visiting him frequently and would sit at his quarters enjoying the elder's company. When one day Baba Karam Singh asked Jamal Singh what attracted him to his place, he very simply replied, "I come here because since my childhood I have loved sitting at the feet of the lovers of the Lord." Baba Karam Singh was delighted to find a fellow spirit so young in years, and a lively discussion on spirituality ensued. It turned out that Baba Karam Singh, like Baba Balak Singh of Hazro, mistook the pranic rhythm for the principle of Nam, sung of in the Granth Sahib. The young soldier, who had not yet attained his majority, began with great humility to correct his error. He quoted relevant passages from the six scriptures to show that the divine Shabda was the prime energy activating everything, even prana, but was not to be identified with prana. He dwelt on the fact that all great exponents of Sant Mat, or the path of the masters, had clearly and unequivocally declared that in our time, pranayama and other such practices could not bring inner emancipation. He then spoke of his great teacher at Agra and of his inspiring teachings, and helped Baba Karam Singh to get on to the right path to God. After the Great Rebellion of 1857, the regiment in which Jamal Singh was employed was disbanded. He had not met his family for a long time and proceeded straight home. His mother's joy at seeing him again knew no bounds, but he was not destined to be with her for long. On receiving the news that a 24th Sikh regiment had been formed at Peshawar, he bade his family farewell and proceeded to join it. After some time in the Northwest Frontier Province, the regiment was transferred in January 1858 to Ambala. In September of the following year, it was transferred to Sagar, a city on the banks of a large lake in central India. By now, Jamal Singh's fellow soldiers had got used to his rigorous spiritual discipline, but during the days the regiment would be marching, they were surprised to find him excavate a small dugout in which he would then sit in a reclining posture, his back resting against the earthly embankment, and pass the entire night in meditation. While stationed at Sagar, Jamal Singh one night requested Swamiji in meditation that the regiment be transferred next to Agra so that he could have the benefit of sitting at his holy feet. A man of God realization can work strange miracles. Being at one with the will of God and a guru's love for a true disciple is so great that he denies him nothing. Jamal Singh's prayer was granted, and next morning he casually observed to Bhagwan Singh, his mate, and a devoted admirer, that as and when the regiment would be transferred, it would be moved to Agra. What we cannot explain in terms of what we know, we normally term as miracle. Thus, the first witnesses of locomotion looked upon what they saw as a wonder. Yet today, hardly anyone would take it as such. In like manner, he who has mastered the inner science knows that what people take as miracles are not miracles as such, but are based on the higher laws of creation, accessible only to the scientists of the spirit, and who have explored the mysteries of the inner path. See in this connection the chapter The Law of Miracles, in the autobiography of a yogi by Paramhamsa Yogananda. On that occasion, Bhagwan Singh took a little notice of what was said, but when the news of its new next stationing was received, the story of the prophetic soldier spread through the regiment like wildfire. We have reached the end of our time for this reading today. We were reading a great saint, Baba Jamal Singh, his life and teachings. We thank you, Master, for this chance to read your great works that always inspire us, and we pray, as always, in gratitude, and that we also pray sincerely that we will continue to live up to what you ask of us. Guru Shab Anami.
Thank you, Scott, for reading for us. There were 82 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
The world is not our home, nor this body which we are living in. Our true home is your house, our Father.